A sturdy rope ladder unfurled from the open trap door, and the High Warlock began his descent. As Rupert watched, open-mouthed, the old man climbed agilely down to join him. Seen close up, the warlock wasn't particularly impressive. Deep lines etched his narrow face, and his eyes were vague.
What are you doing here? And why are all those soldiers cluttering up my view?
We need your help, Sir Warlock. The Darkwood...
Ah, terrible place, the Darkwood. It's so dark.
The old man held out a hand, as if waiting for a shake. Rupert self-consciously raised his own, but then hesitated when he noticed a small cloud begin to form in the man's palm. A glass of white wine appeared in his hand from nowhere.
Care for a drop?
Not right now, thank you.
It's good stuff. I make it myself. See?
Wait, all this stuff, the tubing, the glassware, it's not for your magic?
What, all this? No, it's to make wine. Although one could say a fine vintage is like magic. Ah, very good. I put a dead rat into every new barrel to give it a little body.
Huh. We can talk about the wine later, Sir Warlock. Right now, I need your help.
Do you know who I am, young man?
You're the High Warlock, the last hope of the Forest Land.
Don't you people ever learn. I don't give a damn about the Forest Land. Your whole stinking little kingdom can rot in hell for all I care. Now get out of here! Get out of my home! And leave me in peace, damn it.
That's no way to speak to your prince.
Rupert looked quickly round and was relieved to find the massive figure of the champion filling the open window. The warlock glared at the champion, and then all the strength seemed to run out of him. He lifted his wine glass to his lips, but it was empty.
Why can't you leave me alone? Just go away! Leave me!
If it was up to me, I'd leave you to hide in your hole until hell froze over. Unfortunately, the king needs you.
I'm not going back, and there's not a damn thing you can say that'll change my mind. There's nothing to call me back to the forest, nothing at all.
He stopped suddenly, and for the first time looked closely at Rupert.
The champion said you were a prince. Are you really one of John's boys?
Yes, I'm Rupert, the younger son.
Of course, Rupert. I thought you looked familiar. You look a lot like your mother.
I have 25 men outside. Will you give them shelter from the night?
They're safe enough out there. No demons can pass my wards. Your men can camp outside tonight and leave in the morning. Of course, you're welcome to stay here, Rupert. It's been a long time since I last saw you.
21 years, Warlock. 21 years since you turned traitor.
I'm not a traitor. I was never a traitor!
Bright crimson spots burned on the warlock's cheeks as he stepped forward to glare up at the champion, his hands clenched into fists.
I left because I chose to. For more than 45 years, I watched over the forest kings, keeping the land from harm. I was John's protector when you were still learning which end of a sword to hold. Why I finally decided to leave is my business, not yours. I gave 45 years of my life to the forest land. You've no right to ask any more of me.
Take a good look, sire. There was a time, long ago, when this drunken old fool was a hero. The most powerful magician the forest land had ever known. His deeds are legendary. There are dozens of songs about him. You probably know some of them. There were even those who said he had the makings of a sorcerer supreme. But somewhere along the line, he decided to throw it all away. He turned his back on his duty and frittered away his magic on fireworks, illusions, and pretty baubles for the ladies. He could have inspired a generation, but he preferred to spend his time getting drunk and chasing the tavern whores. The High Warlock of legend, a coward and a renegade who betrayed his king when his king most needed him.
It wasn't like that! You bastard. It wasn't like that at all.
It was exactly like that, you old fool.
Damn you!
Champion!
A pure white flame roared from the warlock's outstretched hand, throwing the champion against a wall.
You don't understand a single thing, you simple-minded little troll. You've always just wanted to beat a problem into submission, haven't you? Well, how does it feel, champion? How does it feel to be helpless? You can't stop this no matter how much you want to.
Blood ran from the champion's nose and mouth. His eyes rolled back in his head. The man was out cold, and the warlock didn't even seem to notice.
Warlock! Don't make me!
Rupert found himself thrown to the floor like a dozen demons had pulled him down. The warlock had blasted him off his feet with a wave of pressure without even looking around. Rupert tried to get up and couldn't. All he could do was watch helplessly as the warlock's balefire slowly lifted the champion higher against the wall, leaving the man pinned a good 20 feet above the floor.
I never liked you, champion. You and your precious duty. You don't know the meaning of the word. What did duty ever mean to you except as an excuse to kill people? Well, there's no king to protect you now, Sir Champion. I've waited a long time for this.
Rupert looked frantically around for his sword. Already the champion's chainmail was glowing cherry red under the relentless heat of the balefire. Individual links sagged and ran away in tiny rivers of molten steel. Rupert finally spotted his sword lying just out of reach under a nearby table. He gritted his teeth and dragged himself forward inch by inch until he could reach the blade. His head still buzzed angrily from the knock it had taken during the fall, but he could feel his strength rushing back as he wrapped his hand around the familiar sword hilt. He grabbed the table edge and lifted himself to his feet. The High Warlock had his back to him, intent on his victim. The champion's eyes were closed, and he didn't seem to be breathing. Rupert staggered forward and set the point of his sword against the warlock's back.
Let him down! Let him down now!
Go to hell! No man calls me a traitor and lives!
I am your prince! In my father's name, I order you to release his champion! Champion!
He's fine.
Rupert knelt to examine the champion. His chainmail had melted and fused together, and the leather jerkin beneath had been charred and consumed by the intense heat, but the bare flesh under the gaping hole was completely unharmed.
He's been untouched. His breathing's even. It's like you've never even attacked him.
A simple healing spell. He'll be all right in a while.
Would you really have killed him if I hadn't stopped you?
Probably not. I always was too soft-hearted for my own good. Not to mention extremely loyal to your father. You don't fight fair, Rupert.
Of course not. I'm a prince.
Here. Share some wine with an old man. After all you've been through, you deserve a drink.
You know, I do think you're right. Not a bad vintage, Sir Warlock.
One of my more useful spells, transporting wine, saves me so many trips to the cellar.
The champion was telling me you made a wonderful roast duck.
Ah, yes. He always did like that.
Did you just transport that too, or conjure it out of nothing?
Two things, Prince Rupert. One, you don't just transport anything. Can you make something appear out of thin air? I think not. It's a complex spell and not to be taken lightly. You don't even want to think about what would happen if I just transported that glass of wine into your head.
Wait, so would it replace what's already in my head or
You're thinking about it. What did I just say? Secondly, you can't make something out of nothing. Anybody who claims they can is a thief, not a warlock. No! Conjuring food or any other complex matter is more like a transformation than anything else. You need raw organic material, and you need in-depth knowledge on whatever you're making.
So, for the roast duck, you...
I studied ducks until I couldn't stand it. I was dreaming about their beaks. Their quacking was in my head. It was horrible. I much preferred studying pies, at least until I learned a silencing spell.
Oh, that's why all these animals are being quiet right now.
Precisely. These things would never shut up if I wasn't nearby. It lets me study them without interruption.
So all these animals are... Oh.
What can I say? I do so enjoy a good meal. and it's hard to get fresh pig when you've locked yourself in a tower. Now this wine. I've tried to conjure, but there's always something to be said for doing something the proper way. Gives it that taste that only comes from having worked for it. Ah, now. Prince Rupert, what brings you to the Dark Tower after all these years?
It's the Darkwood, Sir Warlock. It's spreading. We think the Demon Prince has returned.
Damn. How fast is it spreading?
0.5 mile a day when we left. Of course, with the blue moon rising.
Wait a minute. Are you sure about the blue moon?
Haven't you looked at the moon lately?
I haven't been outside this tower in 21 years. I've never felt the need. I suppose now is a good time to start.
He gestured with his free hand, and he and Rupert rose slowly into the air until they were on a level with the open window. Outside, night had fallen. Stars shone brightly against the dark, and the waiting guardsmen had built themselves a fire. But the main light came from the three-quarters moon. It hung fat and swollen on the night, its lambent flesh mottled with thick blue veins. The warlock stared, horrified, at the tainted moon. Clearly shaken and confused, it was some time before he could tear his gaze away and turn to look at Rupert.
I didn't know. I should have known, but I didn't. What else have I missed?
He frowned worriedly as he and Rupert sank gently back to the floor.
I'm sorry, Prince Rupert. I seem to have lost touch with what's been going on in the world. Has it really been 21 years? Where did all the time go? Ah, well, that's what being a drunken hermit does for you. I suppose your father sent you to bring me back to court. Yes, I thought so. Typical of the man. Wait until things have got completely out of hand and then dump the whole damn mess in my lap and expect me to work miracles. So help me, if it wasn't my neck as well. I'd just sit back and let him stew in his own juices. Unfortunately, I can't do that, and he knows it. Despite all I may have said and done, the forest is my home, and I can't turn my back on it. It'll be strange going back to my old quarters in the castle after all these years. I hope they've been redecorated. I never did like the color scheme. I take it John has lifted the edict of banishment?
Of course. He needs you, Sir Warlock.
And I'll bet that sticks in his craw something horrible. Well, I suppose we'd better get a move on. It's a fair way back to the forest castle. The sooner we make the start, the better.
You want to leave now, while it's still night? We wouldn't make it to the Darkwood. Sir Warlock, my men are in no condition to fight demons. They must have time to rest and regain their strength.
Not to worry. We won't have to go back through the Darkwood. I know a shortcut.
A short...
Rupert turned toward the sound, sword in hand. The champion had regained consciousness and was holding his axe ready to strike. His face was flushed with rage, but his eyes were cold and dark. He smiled grimly, advancing slowly toward the High Warlock.
You're a dead man, sorcerer. You should have killed me while you had the chance.
Oh, hell, I'd forgotten about him. Would you care to explain the situation to him, Rupert? Or shall I turn him into something less aggressive, like a dormouse?
He'll listen to me.
The warlock shrugged and wandered off to study the animals in their cages. The champion started after him, and Rupert moved hastily forward to block his way.
Lower your weapon, Sir Champion. The High Warlock has agreed to help us against the Darkwood.
Get out of my way, Rupert!
We need his magic.
He tried to kill me!
Yes! If I hadn't stopped him, it's entirely possible he would have. But even if he had, and you lay dead and cold at my feet, I'd still bargain with him. He's our only hope against the darkness, the only chance for survival the forest has. And that makes him more important than you or I will ever be. So lower your weapon, Sir Champion. That's an order.
The champion put away his axe and glared at the warlock. The short man had moved on to gaze upon one of his tables covered with bubbling glassware. Some new vintage, thought Rupert. Probably shoved a few pheasants in the mix while nobody was looking.
The High Warlock was an old man when I first came to court. He'd have to be in his 90s by now. How do we know he's up to helping us against the Darkwood?
I'm not, but I will be. I think it's ready now.
Ugh. One of these days I'm going to have to work on the taste.
Sir Warlock, you've already had 2 glasses of wine. Do you need your full faculties while navigating this shortcut of yours?
Oh, loosen up. Anyway, this isn't wine. I would never insult the craft with a concoction such as this. Now on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Sir Warlock? Sir?
Rupert ran over to the Warlock and grabbed his shoulders as he collapsed onto the ground, shivering and shaking. He winced as he helped support the Warlock's weight. And then Rupert felt his hackles rise as the Warlock's flesh writhed under his hands. He snatched his hands away, watching disbelievingly as new bands of muscle swelled and crawled over the Warlock's bony frame. His shoulders widened and his back slowly straightened, the vertebrae shifting and jerking under his robes. Rivulets of black ran swiftly through the thickening gray hair. The Warlock straightened up, and Rupert watched in awe as he tugged casually at his beard until it came away in his hands, revealing fresh, baby-smooth skin glowing with health. The thick mane of jet-black hair fell to his shoulders, and all that remained of his beard was a rakish black mustache. His back was straight, his frame was muscular, and all in all, he looked no more than 30 years old at most. He grinned broadly at Rupert.
Not much use being able to transform things if you can't do it to yourself as well, eh, lad?
I suppose so, yes.
Now then, I suppose you're here about the Darkwood.
We already told you that.
Did you? My memory isn't what it was. I really should do something about that, but I keep forgetting. Anyway, our main problem isn't the Darkwood, it's the Demon Prince.
Oh, we figured that out for ourselves.
Interrupt me again and you're an aardvark! Got it?
Rupert nodded. He wasn't altogether sure what an aardvark was, but he had a definite feeling he wouldn't enjoy finding out firsthand.
The Demon Prince. Evil that walks in the shape of man. The never-born. The soulless. One of the transient beings. The stalkers on the edge of reality. His power increases as the blue moon rises. But if we can get to him before the moon is full, before the wild magic is loosed in the land...
The Warlock's voice trailed away, and his shoulders slumped. He suddenly looked very tired, despite his new youthfulness.
Well, listen to me. I'm talking as though we actually stood a chance against the Demon Prince. Even at my peak, I was never that good. And I'm a long way from my peak. My power stems from the high magic. But the Darkwood is of the old, wild magic.
What's the difference?
The high magic can be controlled. The wild magic owes no allegiance to anything save itself. Oh, I don't know. There's always the infernal devices in the castle armory. They could make a difference.
For the first time, Rupert realized that when it came to the Darkwood, the mighty and awesome High Warlock was just as scared and uncertain as he was.
You show me a way to fight the darkness, and I'll follow you anywhere, even if it means going back into the Darkwood.
You're a practical one, aren't you?
I've had good teachers.
All right, let's give it a try. Who knows, we might get lucky.
Can we go now? We've little enough time as it is.
Oh, sure. Race you to the window, Rupert?
Wait a minute. Just out of curiosity, Sir Warlock, why aren't there any doors?
Windows are easier to defend. And besides, I never needed a door. Till now, I never went out.
He paused to peer wistfully around the crowded room.
What a mess. I always meant to get organized one day, but I just never got around to it. I suppose I'd better put the animals into hibernation before I go. It's... kinder than... well, it's all for the best, I suppose.
He walked towards the nearest window, looking out at the darkening land.
You know, Rupert, I should never have left the Sorcerer's Academy. I was quite happy there, changing gold into lead.
Shouldn't that be lead into gold?
Why do you think I had to leave?
The wall of falling snow pressed close around the dark tower, and the night air was bitter cold. The fresh silver snow covered all the grass and sparkled on the ancient brickwork of the tower. The warlock was leaving. Summer was over, and already the bleak midwinter laid claim to the land so long denied it. Every now and again, Rupert glimpsed strange dark shapes moving purposefully through the blizzard, watching and waiting for the High Warlock to step outside the protection of his remaining shields. Rupert scowled and rested one hand on the pommel of his sword. His guards were tired, battered, and bloodied from their trip through the dark wood, and now he had to ask them to do it again. The warlock had said something about a shortcut, a way to avoid the long night, but Rupert knew better. The maps were clear enough. There was only one route that would get his people back to Forest Castle before the full moon, and that was the way they'd come, through the dark wood.
I'm hungry.
You're always hungry. How can you think of food at a time like this?
I've had lots of practice. What are we waiting for now? I hate hanging around like this.
Well, not to worry. We'll be heading back into the dark wood soon enough.
Yeah, well, on second thought then, let's hang around here for a while.
Now, it shouldn't be so bad this time. We'll have the High Warlock with us.
He looked up and saw the sorcerer approaching. The warlock was drinking wine and was looking perpetually about to lose his balance. The unicorn studied him carefully.
This is the High Warlock? Our great hope against the Demon Prince?
Yes.
We're in big trouble.
Shut up.
Rupert moved quickly forward to greet the warlock.
Ah, Rupert. Are your men ready to leave?
Yes, Sir Warlock. They're good men. You can rely on them to protect your back once we enter the Darkwood.
I'm sure I could. But luckily that won't be necessary. We're not going back through the Darkwood. I'm going to transport us straight to the Forest Castle.
Rupert's heart sank. His mouth was suddenly very dry.
That's your shortcut? A teleport spell?
Precisely, dear fellow.
I saw you teleport wine into your hand, but that's just a single glass. You want to teleport all of us to a place you haven't even seen for 21 years? Doesn't that seem rather dangerous for people?
Dangerous indeed. That's why nobody uses teleport spells anymore for people, except in emergencies.
Sir Warlock, I did not lead my men clean across the Forest Kingdom and through the Long Night itself just to throw their lives away on a sorcerer's whim. Look at you, the state you're in. They'd be safer facing the demons.
Prince Rupert, if there was any other way to reach the castle in time, I'd take it. But there isn't. A teleport's our only chance.
A teleport could get us all killed! Look, if it was just me and my men, I'd risk it. But I can't allow you to put your life at risk. You're the last hope of the Forest Land, Sir Warlock. With you gone, there'd be no one left to stand against the darkness.
Don't rely on me, Prince. That's a good way to get killed. I've lived too long with myself to harbor any illusions, Rupert. I'm nowhere near as powerful as I used to be, and I never was as powerful as the legends had it. I could have been, but I threw it all away. On wine and women. Just as the champion said. I make no apologies, I had my reasons, good ones. But don't be under any illusions about my magic. I can't just snap my fingers and make the Demon Prince disappear. What magic I have is at your disposal, along with whatever knowledge and low cunning my tired old mind retains. If I can get us to the castle in time, I think I can help. But I'm not indispensable to your fight, Rupert. I'm not that important anymore. I never was, really.
I don't doubt your magic, Sir Warlock. It's that goblet in your hand that worries me. Anybody can make a mistake when he's the worse for drink.
I'm not much of a sorcerer when I'm drunk, Rupert. But I'm worse when I'm sober. There are too many memories in my old head. Too many unhappy memories. It's only the wine that keeps them quiet. The champion was right, you know. I could have been a sorcerer supreme. I could have been a hero out of legend. Unfortunately, I just wasn't up to it. Not everyone is. When all is said and done, I'm not the stuff heroes are made of. I'm not particularly brave or clever. I have a talent for magic. I've studied the art all my life. But your family always expected so damn much from me. Every time some new magical menace appeared, they'd send me off to deal with it. Never mind the risk to my life. Every ogre and demon and natural disaster. Eventually, I just got tired. Tired of the responsibility, the pressure, and being scared all the time. That's when I started drinking. It helped at first, and still, your family piled more and more responsibility on me. Until finally I broke under the weight of it, simple as that. Then I fell in love with a lady who turned out not to care for me. And, well, it's a familiar enough story, I suppose. Look, Prince Rupert, what I'm trying to say is this is a kind of second chance for me. Don't ask me to stop drinking because I can't. But if you'll trust me, I'll give you everything I've got. My word on it.
Rupert looked steadily at the High Warlock. All the sorcerer's new youthfulness couldn't disguise the tired, defeated set of his shoulders. But still, he held his head high, his pride ready to stand or fall by whatever answer Rupert gave. The prince smiled and reached out to clap the warlock lightly on the shoulder.
Prepare the teleport spell. It would be a long, hard struggle fighting our way back through the Darkwood. I'd rather get my men home safely.
Thank you, sire. You won't regret this, I promise you.
Time passed, and the night wore on. The blue-tainted moon shone brightly down as the warlock chivied the guardsmen into a small, compact crowd. At first, the guards hadn't been all that impressed by the warlock, with his wine-stained robes and absent-minded airs. But after seeing what the warlock had done to the champion's chainmail in a fit of pique, they developed a new respect for him. The champion moved over to join Rupert and nodded at the High Warlock, who was sitting cross-legged in midair, staring at nothing.
You mustn't go ahead with the teleport, sire. We can't trust him.
I've made my decision, Sir Champion.
He's a traitor and a drunkard.
Shut up!
The champion blinked in surprise, taken aback by Rupert's sudden anger.
I don't want to hear another word from you. Go back to your men and stay there. That's an order.
The champion looked at him steadily for a long moment, and then he bowed slightly and moved away to take his place among the guardsmen.
Was that really necessary?
Yes.
There are times when you sound a lot like your brother.
The blizzard pressed closer, its solid wall of snow devouring the clearing inch by inch. The demons watched and waited in ever-increasing numbers, impervious to the unrelenting cold and the howling wind. Hoarfrost enveloped the dark tower in an icy cocoon and shimmered whitely on the men's armor. Rupert's breath steamed on the freezing air, and his bare face ached from the cold. A light snow began to fall within the clearing, and then, finally, the High Warlock dropped his feet to the earth and nodded briskly to Rupert.
Sorry about the delay, sire. Just checking the arrival coordinates. Get the decimal point wrong, and we might all appear several hundred feet above the ground, or even under it.
The guardsmen exchanged glances.
Start the teleport.
Very well, sire. If you and the unicorn would care to stand just here beside me. Thank you. And now we begin.
He raised his arms in the stance of summoning, and his gaze became fixed on something only he could see. For a long moment, nothing happened. The warlock's brow furrowed as he concentrated. Outside the clearing, the wind raged and the storm intensified.
Ooh, do you hear that?
Yes, that's the teleport spell, I hope.
Ah, there we go!
Space itself ripped apart before the warlock, revealing a wide silvery tunnel that seemed to fall away forever.
Everybody in, quickly now!
The warlock rose slowly into the air, and then, one by one, Prince Rupert, the unicorn, the champion, and the guardsmen left the ground behind them. Once they had all passed through, the warlock took one last look at his tower and walked into the portal. The rip in space slammed together and was gone, with no trace to show it had ever been there. The last of the warlock's shields collapsed and fell apart, and the howling storm, unfettered at last, swept forward to swirl around the empty dark tower. King John did his best to follow the usual pattern of life at court, in spite of distractions both foreign and domestic.
Please step forward, good sir. There's no need to fear.
Of course. My apologies, sire.
This is your first time here, I assume?
Yes, my king.
Well, there's nothing to fear from me. Simply state your name.
Get the hell away from me right this minute or I'll flatten you!
As I was saying, before we can begin, tell me your name so that
what,
I...
Do you think I'm kidding here?
Julia, my sweet, if you only let
me...
Usher, please approach the throne.
Was an impressive punch. Yes, your majesty?
Take my compliments to my son Harold and the Princess Julia, and tell them I will see them after this audience is ended. You will further add that if I hear one more word from either of them before that time, so help me, I'll have them chained together and put to work cleaning out the castle cesspits.
Yes, your majesty.
The usher headed quickly for the closed antechamber doors. King John frowned. Harold and Julia were at it again. The king leaned back in his throne and tried to pretend it wasn't distracting him. He had more than enough to worry about without having to deal with his potential daughter-in-law as well. A dozen petitioners from the outlying farms waited patiently before him, leaning tiredly on their great longbows, their homespun clothes battered and begrimed with the dirt and dust of long days on the road. They'd arrived on foot little more than an hour ago, pounding determinedly on the closed castle gates as night fell early across the forest. On hearing the nature of the news they bore, King John had cursed softly to himself and granted the farmers a private audience. And now they stood before him in the empty court, tall, broad-shouldered men with sturdy, muscular bodies formed by continuous, back-breaking work from dawn to dusk. There was nothing soft or weak about the harsh planes of their faces, but in their haunted eyes the king saw a naked fear and desperation that chilled him to his bones. King John shook his head slowly and turned back to the waiting farmers.
I'm most sorry about that. My eldest son is courting.
The farmers smiled and nodded and seemed to relax a little for the first time since entering the court. King John searched for something else to say that might help put the farmers more at their ease. He leaned forward, looking at the man who had decided to step up first. He was middle-aged, his face tanned and rough as leather. He was plainly ill at ease in the grandeur of the forest court, and he didn't seem to know what to do with his hands, which were large and awkward and tattooed with ground-in dirt from working the earth all his days. But when he finally began to speak, the king forgot all these things and saw only the simple dignity of a man weighed down with pain, yet still unbroken and unbowed.
Now, what is your name?
My name is Mad...
My apologies, your majesty, but he stormed right past me.
Your majesty, please forgive the intrusion, but this time you've got to do something.
The king closed his eyes briefly and wished wistfully that he was somewhere else. Anywhere else.
I tried to tell the seneschal that this was not the time, but he barged in here.
No, it's all right. Thank you. What is it this time, Sir Seneschal?
The seneschal nodded brusquely to the mystified farmers, then leaned heavily on his walking stick and glared at the king.
It's those damned goblins again. You should never have let those disgusting little creatures into the castle, sire. They've been nothing but trouble since they got here. I don't know what possessed young Prince Rupert to send them to us in the first place. I've known burrow-down gutter-snipes that were more civilized. It took us 3 weeks to teach them to use the toilets, and another 3 weeks to stop them using the sinks. It's not as though they contributed anything to the castle's defenses. They can't fight, and they won't take orders from anyone except their own leaders. They're passable scouts, when I can persuade them to set foot outside the safety of the castle walls, but they keep setting traps for demons and then forgetting where they put them. Oh, you wouldn't believe how many trackers we've lost that way. It's keeping the poachers on their toes, I'll admit. But that's not the point, Your Majesty.
Sir Seneschal, what exactly is your problem? What have the goblins done now?
Well, sire, for want of anything better to do with them, I put them in charge of manning the battlements. It seemed a good idea. I mean, what harm could they get up to on the battlements? I should have known better. You will be interested to learn, Your Majesty, that I have finally discovered why the kitchens are always short of cauldrons these days. It's because those damned goblins have been stealing them. They cart them up to the battlements to boil their oil. We only just managed to stop the little bastards from testing their latest batch by dropping it on the three lands' graves as they rode in from their day's hunting.
Really, that would have been quite a tragedy. Were any of the noble lands' graves injured?
Well, not actually injured, sire, but if they hadn't been wearing cloaks and chainmail...
The king noticed the farmer's unsuccessful coughing fit. It seemed the landsgraves weren't that popular outside the court, either. The king made a mental note to look into that. He could always use more allies against the barons.
I'm glad to hear that no one was hurt. How did the landsgraves take it?
You can ask them yourself, Your Majesty. They should be here momentarily.
Really? Thanks for the advance warning. Round up the goblins and send the lot of them out into the forest. I need to know how fast the Darkwood is advancing, and the troop of guards I sent to find out hasn't come back. If nothing else, goblins do make excellent reconnaissance scouts, mainly because they have a positive gift when it comes to hiding from anything even remotely threatening.
Very good, sire. I'll send them on their way. They do mean well, Your Majesty. It's just that they are...
Yes, they are, aren't they?
Yes, sire. Thank you for your understanding.
The seneschal grinned, bowed, and left. As he walked out, the three landsgraves walked in. The two royal guardsmen glanced at each other and then moved protectively closer to the throne, their hands ostentatiously near their swords. Ever since he'd been dragged senseless from the court after his assassination attempt, Sir Bedivere had been careful to wear an empty scabbard at all times. But even so, there wasn't a guard in the castle that trusted him an inch, or the other two landsgraves, come to that. Sir Bedivere, Sir Blaise, and Sir Gwillem marched forward, and the farmers, now accustomed to how these kinds of things went, gave way to them. They stepped passively aside so that the landsgraves could take their center position before the throne. They knew better than to protest to men who represented the barons. Farmers might work the land, but the barons owned it. King John studied the three landsgraves warily. There was a calm sureness about them that worried him. Still, when in doubt, attack. He leaned forward in his throne and glared coldly at Sir Blaise.
This is a private audience, Sir Landsgrave. I have business with these men.
The peasants can wait. We have business with you.
And what might that be?
Demons have overrun the barons' lands. What are you doing about it?
You know damn well what I'm doing. My guards are running themselves ragged fighting the demons, training peasant militias in those towns nearest the darkness, and helping to stockpile provisions in case of siege.
While the castle itself stands virtually unprotected.
There's always the goblins, my dear Landsgrave. I'm told they're very good with boiling oil.
Sir Blaise stiffened angrily, and Sir Gwillem laid a restraining hand on his arm. The two Landsgraves stared at each other. Sir Gwillem shook his head slightly, and Sir Blaise subsided. That little interaction didn't escape the king's notice. Gwillem seemed to be running this meeting. He always knew there was more to Gwillem than met the eye. He glanced quickly at Sir Bedivere, who was staring off into the distance as though nothing that had been said was of any interest to him. Probably it isn't, thought the king sourly. He's just a killing machine waiting for his next set of orders. But who gives those orders, Blaise or Gwillem? He stared at the timid little man standing passively before him and tugged pensively at his beard. Why had the baron sent Sir Gwillem? He wasn't a diplomat, like Sir Blaise, and he certainly hadn't the makings of an assassin. He claimed to be an accountant, but so far he'd made no attempt to inspect the castle's finances. Not that the king would have let him, of course. King John frowned uncertainly. If the Landsgraves hadn't come to complain about the goblins, what the hell were they here for? And why were they so interested in his guards? The answers weren't going to come easy. Now that the astrologer was no longer on hand to advise him, it seemed he'd have to keep digging for answers the hard way.
Well, Sir Gwillem, perhaps you'd care to tell me why you've chosen to interrupt this private audience? Sir Blaze doesn't seem too sure.
There are questions which need to be answered, sire.
Such as?
Well, such as what's happened to the High Warlock. He does seem to be rather overdue. Months overdue, in fact.
He'll be here.
When?
How the hell should I know?
You don't seem too unhappy about his tardiness, sire. Anyone would think you didn't want him to come.
Sir Blaze, I don't care to be interrogated in this manner. You know very well how I feel about the High Warlock. You were here, in fact, the night I read the Edict of Banishment upon him. Now, my noble Landsgraves, it's been a long day, and I still have much to do. What exactly do you want from me?
We want action. Fine words and promises won't stop the Darkwood. I know I speak for my fellow Landsgraves when I say the Barons will not stand idly by and watch the forest land fall into ruin while you dither and prevaricate and do nothing.
I'm doing all I can.
It isn't enough.
Don't come another step closer. As you see, my guards know what to expect from the likes of you.
If you won't do what's necessary, there are others who will.
That sounded like a threat. Perhaps you've forgotten what happened the last time you dared threaten me.
Yes. Where is Thomas Gray these days? Still hunting for the lost Cortana?
It won't find itself, Sir Gwillem. The astrologers work day and night trying to discover who stole the Cortana from my armory.
Assuming it was stolen. You slipped up there, Your Majesty. It was just a little too convenient that the Sword of Compulsion should vanish into thin air the moment the armory was rediscovered, thus putting the Cortana beyond the reach and control of the court.
You tread dangerous ground, my noble Landsgrave.
Really? When you took the Sword of Compulsion for yourself, you lost all claim to our loyalty.
We cannot accept such a threat to the Barons. We therefore demand in their name that you hand the Cortana over to us for safekeeping.
You demand? You demand nothing in my court. You are here at my sole discretion, Landsgrave, and it seems you have forgotten that. Now get out, or I'll have you whipped from my sight. Get out!
You really shouldn't have done that. I'll have your heart's blood for this insult.
You dare!
There's no astrologer to protect you now, King John. All that stands between you and me are those two guards, and that isn't going to be enough. Give me your sword, Blaze.
Sir Blaze glanced at Sir Gwillem, who hesitated, and then nodded quickly.
You'd better get out of here, sire. We'll hold him off as long as we can.
King John turned to the guardsman who had spoken. The man's eyes didn't show a trace of fear. He would fight to the death if asked.
Blaze, why are you doing this? We've known each other more than 30 years.
Forgive me, sire. Please get the hell out of here. The alarm must be raised.
That won't be necessary. The king has nothing to fear as long as we are with him.
The king and the three Landsgraves turned to stare dumbly at the farmers as they deftly fitted arrows to their longbows and held them at the ready.
How dare you? How dare you defy the Barons? I'll have your farms burned for this!
The 12 farmers stared steadily back, their arrows strung and ready. Sir Bedivere studied them impassively, and then held out his hand to Sir Blaze.
Draw and give me your sword, Blaze. They're just peasants. Your sword, Blaze! Give it to me!
No, there's no need for this.
For a moment, it seemed like Sir Bedivere would attack the farmers empty-handed. But the killing glare faded from his eyes to be replaced by cold, calculating rage. He glared once at the king, then nodded to the other two. They summarily turned and left the court. At the doors, Sir Blaze hesitated and looked back.
You brought this on yourself, John.
King John sank back into his throne, his heart still racing.
You can all put away your weapons now. Thank you for your support, my friends. I shall not forget this.
No thanks are needed, sire. You are our king.
King John nodded, but wasn't really listening. By losing his temper with the Landsgraves, he'd played right into their hands. The only reason for their visit had been to insult and humiliate him before the farmers, to make it clear to them who wielded the real power in the forest land these days. The king frowned worriedly. The Landgraves had moved beyond treason and into open rebellion, secure in the belief that he wouldn't dare have them arrested for fear of starting a civil war. They might just be right at that. He couldn't fight the invading demons without the Baron's support, and they knew it. The king swore silently to himself. There must have been some way he could have avoided all this, but without the astrologer at his side to advise him, he shook his head wearily. These days, the astrologer was his only link with his widespread forces. His guards and militia were scattered all over the land, fighting to hold back the dark. By using his magic, the astrologer could get messages to the various troops much faster than any horseman or carrier pigeon. Unfortunately, there was so much communications work for the astrologer that he had little time for anything else. King John didn't dare call him away from that duty, much as he wanted to. The astrologer had become indispensable. In the meantime, events in the land went from bad to worse. Until he had to cope by himself, King John hadn't realized how much he'd come to depend on his old friend. There were taxes to be set, tithes to be gathered, all the endless paperwork of running a kingdom that never stopped, even when the land was under siege. It had been bad enough when he'd just had to sign the damn stuff. He'd managed to unload some of the more routine matters onto his seneschal, but he was still recovering from the wound he had received while searching for the Kirtana. He seemed even thinner these days, and brought a stick with him for support wherever he went. His health alone was concern enough, but with the Darkwood pressing ever further into the forest, each new day brought more news of refugees on the march, fleeing the approaching darkness with whatever possessions they could carry on their backs. Horses were in short supply, and the guards had commandeered all carts to carry what little of the harvest had been gathered in. The long strung-out trails of homeless people were sitting targets for looters, outlaws, and demons. Guardsmen protected the main roads as best they could, but there just weren't enough men to go round. In the towns, prices soared as food grew scarce. Guards had to be diverted from the roads to put down riots. No matter where the king sent his men, it never seemed to help. They were always too little, too late. Even with his astrologer and his champion to help, it would have been a logistical nightmare. But without them, the king could only stand and watch as his kingdom slowly tore itself apart. He gently massaged his aching temples. Some days, his crown seemed heavier than others. How had he come to rely on the astrologer so much? There was a time when he'd had dozens of advisors and favorites to stand as a buffer between him and his court, the barons, and all the other troubles of his reign. But over the years, all the ones he'd liked and trusted had either died or fallen away or been proven base and false. Until now, only his astrologer and his champion remained to stand at his side and help him bear the weight of kingship. And neither of them was here now when he needed them. The sheer querulousness of that thought sobered him suddenly, and a cold rush of shame ran through him. The astrologer was working himself into the ground, keeping the communications moving, and the champion had ridden unhesitatingly into the Darkwood in search of the High Warlock. If they could do so much in defense of the realm, how could he, as king, be expected to do any less? King John frowned and beat gently on the arm of his throne with his fist. Rupert and the champion were months overdue, and with every day that passed, the chances of their ever returning grew steadily fewer. As far as the court was concerned, everyone on that ill-fated expedition was dead, and had been for some time. The king finally admitted to himself what he couldn't admit in public. Rupert and the champion wouldn't be coming back. The admission hurt him, strangely. Deep down, he'd still somehow clung to the belief that the High Warlock would return from exile and drive back the demons and the darkness with his sorcery, and all would be well again. It came hard to the king to realize he'd wasted so much hope on an empty dream.
Your Majesty?
My apologies. I'm sorry. The castle migration began last week, and I have much on my mind. Now, hopefully I will be able to hear you without any further interruptions. Please state your name and what you all have come here for.
I am Madoc Thorne of Birchwater Domain. I farm 12 acres as my father did before me, and his father before him. The land is yet kind to my family, though we must work it hard and long to make our living and still pay our taxes and our tithes. For nigh on 7 generations, my family has raised the corn and gathered it in, harvest after harvest. It was my intention someday to hand this on to my eldest son, as it was handed on to me. But I no longer have any sons. The plague has taken them from me.
The tales are true, then. Plague has come to Birchwater.
And passed beyond, sire, spreading faster than a brush fire fanned by the wind. Through all of Birchwater Domain, there's not a town or a village or a hamlet that hasn't felt its touch. 400 dead, to my certain knowledge, and 10 times that number lie trembling in their beds, racked with pain as their fever slowly consumes them. Nothing helps. Not prayer, not medicines, not magic. Men, women, and children are struck down without warning and waste away to nothing as their families watch, helpless. Livestock fall in their byres, never to rise again. Corn stands rotting in the fields, blighted by the early winter, because there's no one left to harvest it. I had 4 sons, Your Majesty. 4 fine sons who worked the land beside me. Good boys, all of them. So far, I've had to bury 2 of them, and their mother. The other 2 cannot leave their beds. By the time I return home, it seems likely I'll have to dig another grave. That's why we've come to you, sire. Because we couldn't sit at home and do nothing while the plague takes our families, wasting the flesh from their bones and twisting their limbs till they cry out from the pain of it. We're not young men, you and I, Your Majesty. We've seen hard times before. I know the hardest time passes eventually. But this time, if you cannot help us, I fear no one will be left to see its passing.
There was a long silence as King John searched for something to say. The farmer had told his tale with a simple honesty that was almost brutal, sparing himself nothing to be sure the king understood what was happening in Birchwater. The king understood only too well. The plague had appeared out of nowhere less than a month ago, starting at the Darkwoods boundaries and then spreading outwards with ferocious speed. At first it was thought that rats carried the disease, and then blame fell upon the refugees. But as more and more deaths were reported in all corners of the land, it soon became clear that there was only one possible source for the contagion. The demons were carrying it out of the Darkwood. And now the plague had come to Birchwater, less than a week's travel from the castle.
I will send you priests and surgeons. As yet, they have no cure to offer, but they can perhaps ease the pain of a victim's passing. I can't guarantee how many will reach you. I no longer have enough men to safeguard the highways. The demons...
The demons! It's always the demons! Without a cure, what use are priests and surgeons to us? Send us men, sire! Men who can fight and will teach us to fight. If we can't defend our homes from the plague, we can at least defend them from the demons that carry it. A bow can only do so much. I know the barons have always forbidden us training in the sword and the axe, but it's our only chance to stop the plague and turn it back.
King John looked at his hands so that he wouldn't have to look into the faces of the farmers. How could he tell them that all their long journey, all their sacrifices, had been for nothing? He lifted his great leonine head. He sought for some comforting words with which to cushion his answer. But as he met the farmer's hopeful eyes, he knew he couldn't lie to them.
My friends, I cannot help you. I have no men to send you, either to guard your fields or train you in the arts of war. The barons no longer heed me. What men they have, they will not relinquish. I've had to strip this castle of guards just to keep the main highways open. I have no shortage of weapons. You're welcome to as many as you can carry, but I cannot spare one man to go with you.
The farmers stared at the king, and then at each other. One of the youngest farmers moved forward to stand beside Madoc Thorne.
Is that it? We came all this way, fighting off outlaws and footpads and creatures of the dark, leaving our families and our farms unprotected. Just to hear you say there's nothing you can do.
I'm sorry.
The young farmer started forward, his fists clenched, but Thorn grabbed him by the arm and held him back.
That's enough! His Majesty has said his piece. He could have lied to us, told us everything would be all right, but he didn't. He told us the truth. We may not like it, but at least now we know where we stand.
Aye, we know that.
And he turned away so that no one could see he was crying. Thorn let him go and stared awkwardly at the king.
He meant no offense, sire. He hasn't been himself since he lost his wife and both his babies to the demons.
I'd help you if I could.
We know that. Sorry to have troubled you, your majesty. It's clear enough you've worries other than ours. If you could have your men sort out a few weapons for us, we'll head back to Birchwater come the morning.
Of course. I'll detail some guards to escort you for the first few miles.
No, thanks. Reckon we can manage on our own. Your Majesty?
Yes?
Best of luck.
Thorn briefly bowed his head and left the court. One by one, the farmers bowed to their king and followed their spokesman out. King John sat on his throne and had bowed to each farmer in turn, and the naked pity in their eyes as they looked on him hurt worse than anything they could have said. They had fought their way through the darkness to reach him. They had defended him against the Landsgraves. But when they turned to him for help, he had none to offer them. He had failed them, but they forgave him because he was their king. And troubled as they were, there was still room in their hearts for pity at what he had become. A tired old man who couldn't cope. One by one, the farmers left the court, and the king watched them go, knowing that with the morning's first light, they would be on their way back into the forest, going home to die with their families.
Your Majesty.
No. Go after the farmers, both of you. Find them quarters for the night, and have the Seneschal issue them whatever weapons they choose. Usher! Find the commander of the Royal Guard and tell him I want to see him. Tell my son I'll see him and Julia when I'm ready and not before. Now, get after those farmers. Move!
Yes, your Majesty. Majesty.
King John leaned back in his throne and stared out over his empty court. Outside, night had fallen and darkness pressed against the stained glass windows. The many-candled chandeliers spread a golden glow across the court, but still the shadows gathered up among the rafters, and there was a chill to the night air that would take more than a simple fire to dispel. The king stared grimly about him, trying to see his court as it must have looked to the farmers. A quiet horror filled him as, for the first time in a long time, he saw the court as it was instead of how it used to be. The tiled floor was cracked and worn. The grout was coming out in long snakes. The portraits and tapestries were blackened and begrimed by smoke from the fire. And even the marble dais upon which his throne stood was dull and chipped. And under all the superficial evidence of neglect, there was also a feeling of age, of something whose time had passed. The forest court had been ancient when King John first came to the throne. But never before had it seemed so faded and shabby to his eyes. As with so many other things, it had fallen apart gradually over the years, and he just hadn't noticed. How had it all come to this? The king picked at the ragged ermine collar of his cloak. He'd always done his best for the kingdom, done everything that was required of him. He'd made a good marriage, and they'd been happy together until illness had taken her from him. 21 long years ago. That had been his first real lesson in kingship. It had seemed such a simple thing at first, a chill after a summer swim, and then the chill became a fever, and the fever became something worse. At the end, she lay in her bed, her face gaunt from all the weight she'd lost, her head rolling back and forth on the sweat-soaked pillow. Again and again she coughed bright red blood in long, painful spasms that racked her frail body. All through the long days and longer nights, King John sat by her bed and held her hand, but she didn't even know he was there. The greatest surgeons and priests and magicians had come at his call, but none of them could save her. And at the last, for all his power, the king could only sit beside the bed and watch the one he loved slowly die. King John sat on his throne and looked out over his empty court. He'd done his best, fought the kingdom's battles, defended the land against its enemies, and all for what? To sit alone in a dusty, echoing hall and know his best hadn't been good enough. Out in the antechamber, Harold and Julia glared at each other while they waited for the king's summons.
Look, Julia, you're going to marry me and that's that. It's all been arranged. The contract's been signed.
Not by me.
Your signature wasn't necessary. Neither is your consent. Good try. You know, being around you is doing more for my combat reflexes than all the champion's years of training put together.
He didn't train you very well. I've given you plenty of bruises just in the past week.
Julia, we've been through all this before. This marriage is going to take place no matter how we feel about it. Why not just accept it and make the best of things?
Look, Harold, I'm going to say this once and only once, so listen carefully. I don't love you. I don't even like you. I have about as much feeling for you as I have for what they shovel out of the stables every morning. And I wouldn't marry you if the alternative was leprosy. Got it?
You'll learn to love me after we're married.
You may see the punches coming, but the kicks are still getting through.
This isn't helping your case, you know.
Julia turned her back on him and indulged in a quiet fume. Given her somewhat precarious standing in the court, the last thing she needed was an open feud with the heir to the throne, but she just couldn't help herself. Any woman in the court was Harold's for the asking, and he had to pick on her. She'd known rabbits that were less determinedly amorous. He brought her presents and paid her compliments and couldn't seem to understand why he wasn't getting anywhere. Julia had to admit that Harold could be pleasant company on occasion, but the persistence of the man was matched only by his infuriating self-assurance, and sometimes just the sight of Harold approaching was enough to set Julia's palm itching for the hilt of her sword. Her hand dropped automatically to her side and caressed the pommel briefly. It felt good to have Rupert's sword on her hip again. After her journey into the South Wing, she'd lost no time in throwing away her formal gowns and replacing them with a simple tunic and leggings. Fighting in that damn dress had nearly got her killed. If demons could get into the South Wing, no part of the castle was safe anymore. Julia wore a sword at all times now, and at night her scabbard hung from her bedpost, close at hand. She smiled. When she was living with the dragon in his cave, all she ever dreamed of was being rescued by a dashing prince who'd take her to live in his castle. And then she got rescued by the most undashing prince she'd ever known. And now that she was at the castle, she couldn't wait to get out of it.
Sweetness.
Lay a hand on me and I'll tie your fingers in knots.
Wouldn't think of it. Why don't you like me, Julia? Everyone else does.
She turned back to face him.
Harold, I have no feelings for you. Can't you understand that? I don't love you.
People like us don't marry for love.
I do.
But I'm going to be king one day.
And I don't want to be queen.
Every woman wants to be queen.
I don't.
Then what do you want?
I don't know.
It's Rupert, isn't it?
Maybe.
He's only a second son. He'll never be king.
Oh, that's just all you think about, isn't it? You and everyone else in this damn castle. Well, I'll tell you this, Harold. Rupert may not be the eldest son, and he may not be good enough to sit on your damned throne, but he was good enough to make the rainbow run and good enough to stand beside me and the dragon when we fought off the demons. Rupert is the finest and bravest man I have ever known. He's a warrior and a hero.
Are we even talking about the same person?
And he had the guts to go back into the dark wood again to summon the High Warlock. I don't remember you volunteering to go.
That would have been foolish. It's quite straightforward if you think it through. We couldn't both go. If by some misfortune we were both killed, it would leave the Forest Kingdom without a direct heir to the throne. At the very least, that would mean chaos. At worst, civil war. On the other hand, it was quite clear that one of us had to go. Only a prince of the line stood any chance of persuading the High Warlock to return. So it had to be me or Rupert, and he was the most expendable.
He volunteered. You didn't.
My place is here, defending the castle from its enemies. Let Rupert run around playing the hero if he wants to. I have more important considerations.
Such as what? Chasing me around the castle like a rutting billy goat?
I won't dignify that comment with an answer.
Rupert should have been back months ago. He's your brother. Don't you care about him at all?
If Rupert dies, I'll avenge him.
And I'm sure that'll come as great comfort to him.
Don't expect anything more, Julia. Court life isn't conducive to brotherly love. You should know that. How many of your sisters stood up for you when you were sentenced to death?
That was different. I was guilty.
No more than any of us, Julia. You were just unlucky enough to get caught. When Father dies, Rupert and I could end up fighting on opposite sides of a civil war to decide who finally inherits the throne. We've known that since we were children. You can't afford to get too close to someone you're probably going to have to kill someday. But I promise you this, Julia. If Rupert is dead, I won't rest till I find out who's responsible. And even if it turns out to be the High Warlock himself, I will avenge my brother.
Julia looked at Harold sharply. For a fleeting moment, harsh lines showed in his bland, placid features. The moment passed, but Julia didn't look away, holding his eyes with hers.
You think he's dead, don't you?
It's been 5 months now. Face it, Julia. He's not coming back.
They both fell silent as the usher walked past them towards the double doors of the court.
You think we're going to get called in soon?
I certainly hope so. I have many places I still need to be.
Oh, more people to chat up? More friends in high places?
I'm going to be king. I need to make sure the transition is as smooth as possible.
Prince Harold, Princess Julia, the king will see you now.
Ah, yes, thank you. Remember the cesspits, Julia?
How could I forget?